You're listening to Panel Borders, which is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. This episode is the second of two looking at the Streatham Library Graphic Novels Readers Group. In the first episode, I spoke to some of the members of the group about their interest in comics and their enjoyment of reading sequential art as a social activity, and then podcast the first part of the group's discussion about Charles Burns's lurid graphic novel Black Hole, which mixes 1950s horror comics with more up-to-date concerns about sexuality, STDs, and social exclusion. That continues now, and I'll introduce each member of the group before they talk.
Alex? Well, I mean, all sorts of different references reading it from like the last 50 years. I mean, the look of it is like 1950s horror comics. It's set in the 1970s, so they've got all that kind of like kids lingo supposedly of the time. It's aware of like sexual epidemics of the 80s and 90s. That thing you were just talking about with the totems, I mean, it's like something from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when they visit the cannibal's house and there are like things made out of chicken bones hanging from wires. I just think it's interesting that he just picks all these sort of resonant ideas from the last 50 years and combines them in this narrative that somehow still seems very timeless.
Dickon.
I think his artwork helps that way, doesn't it? His technique is so polished. I mean, it's, you know, his illustrations sort of stand out really easily.
Mike.
His illustrations do have kind of a nostalgic quality to them.
Pedro.
But one of the things I really there's several details that I really enjoyed. For instance, these whole sequences where the panel borders are mimicking, you know, the virus that gets.
And they really stand out because most of the time there's such formalism to the layout that it's always these square blocks, all the square blocks with the wavy surrounds, and then all of a sudden.
And this really conveys, you know, all the boiling emotions that are brewing in these sequences. But I also enjoyed the way that he depicts sexuality, because it's almost noble the way he does it. At least that's what I felt. Because he's just trying to depict it as it is. He's not trying to make it overly sexual or trying to hide it. It's just, you know, making it so natural.
Paul.
You know, I have sexual feelings in this book, and some of them hide them, some of them explore them, some of them flaunt it out, and some of them just get completely drunk so they can't deal with it and then suffer the consequences.
Still talking about the artwork,
Dave.
I like the fact he draws people having sex, but it's not like he actually, there's a penetration scene, but it's not something that any librarian would throw out because it's not. Pornographic. It's not pornographic at all. But there's nothing.
There's nothing titillating in this.
That's probably.
Well, and there's no one who's particularly good looking. I mean, the most good looking people in it are all, you know, fairly plain.
I think the girl with the tail's quite hot. But I think she's the most. She's depicted as the most beautiful character because we see it from the male's perspective.
Most interesting female
character. The one he's firstly has emotions for, and then the second one. It's interesting that because one hides it and we see her becoming more ugly, and the other one, spoiler warning, is not hiding it at all and actually flaunting it and accepting of it, and she becomes more beautiful as time goes on. And I think something that Pedro was describing earlier about how, you know, accepting of your own self and actually becoming more stronger within that, these characters demonstrate that. The more you were trying to repress what you are or who you are, regardless of mutant or not, I think the uglier you become in the story, and we see that with the non-mutant characters as well as the mutant characters.
I think for the mutants, about being ugly inside, internally, whatever, it's for the people who don't lose hope. You know, you can be a mutant, you don't lose hope, you make it through. Well, some people do. But people just they allow their differences to overcome themselves. They become self-destructive.
Well, I mean, the look of the characters is almost a red herring, because, I mean, the dog-faced guy comes across initially as one of the nicest characters, and then
Yeah.
And he's not.
He turns out he's a character. But one thing about the artwork that got me is that all right, he's using very, very at first. Look at like a Bobara, was it? It looks like very hard, this very hard inking. Mm. And you're thinking, everyone's going to look hard in this. The male characters look hard. You know, the features, you don't notice. And then the female characters look like they've got soft skin and texture. It's
yeah.
faces. And
it's the same inking.
I mean,
same
I like drawing.
Yeah.
I like inking. But, I mean, I can't imagine being able to do that. It's like, it's, I find it quite amazing.
The technique there is extremely beautiful. I mean, I'm looking at the
right,
what
well.
The second page where you've got him and her right next to each other, and you can see that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, she's looking extremely soft, and it has this extremely strong contrasting drawing,
even,
which makes it like a memory, as you said.
And even when
there's
heavy shadows on the woman's face, later when you see it, she still look, the face still looks soft.
Yeah.
Where's introduced heavy shadows?
The cinematography of it, the... for want of a better word, you know,
yeah.
the lighting and the angles and all that. The angles are done extremely well, and that's something I find really compelling about this book.
Right.
You are
it's
there
hilarious.
As a movie. Yeah, you are there. I mean, we have... when we look at a book, we actually look at the book. We don't have to squint as, you know, Watchmen-esque, you know, trying to find the background panels. We get shown what we have to look at.
There's lots of dream sequences and sort of flashbacks, which...
yeah, but
if you talk about cinema stuff,
cinema stuff, yeah, but not in terms of we're having. There's no effort required on terms of the reader. Yes, it's a complex narrative in one, you know, with flashbacks and things,
yeah.
And but in terms of you having to comb through and find out that, you know, the angle of a blood drop in Watchmen tells the time or whatever. There's none of that. It's very simple. This person. We're now going to look at, you know, this picture. Let's look at that picture. There's no extra detail to distract you. I'm just looking at that, for example.
I don't know. We've got a copy lying around. Can I just... there's a thing here. You say that, but... Hold up. I don't know what page it is. You remember when he... this sequence, so he starts
yeah.
having a dream. It's like deja vu. Is it deja vu? Is this the deja vu sequence where he passes out? No, this is much later, is it? This is...
Can I just tell you what my
favourite the girl is? Has a dream. Let's finish this bit. The girl has a dream, and she draws out of her foot a little rolled up thing, which looks like a pipe or a tight end of a tail has been cut off.
Yeah.
Then she opens up the serpent.
Yeah.
And then later you come across the lizard queen, and when the end of a tail is broken off, it looks very similar to that.
Yeah.
There is a relationship here.
Oh, it's definitely relationships, and I think there's clever art there.
Yeah.
But I don't think you... have to.
Well, if there is a meaning there, I haven't seen it. You know, but there seems to be some sort of relationship. There's a relationship between all of them. But one of the relationships is bodily fluids. They're all connected in a chain.
And there's regeneration and aspects about penetration. You know, the item going into the hole, whether it's a sexual or
there it's coming out. But it's yeah.
But there's still this whole act of intercourse. Between two people.
Well, it's about sex. The whole thing's about sex. A major motive in the book.
It's a major motive, but I think there's an intercourse between two characters that develops beyond sex.
Yeah.
You know, literally, she. You know, one of the end narratives, she has to go to a place where basically she has to enter somewhere else. There is a strong relationship between her giving up something. I.e., in the sense perhaps of virginity or an understanding of purity,
right,
and
that,
going
that'd be,
into
that'd be Chris, who gets off with the guy called Rob, yeah,
yeah,
right, okay, yeah, yeah, right.
And she at the end has to go to somewhere else.
Now at one point, yeah like
I was trying to be a bit vague for the people
for
who have not moved story.
At one point, there's a fairly innocent exchange, physical exchange between her and Keith, who later on meets up with Elisa or the Lizard Queen.
Yeah.
And that's they're all, and it's all connected. And then he starts developing a mutation, and we don't know whether he got it from the lizard queen, or he got it from Chris, the girl,
or someone else again, which we don't
off
see
off screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, and drugs as well. You were talking about when the rolled up the parchment comes out of her foot. At first, it could be a rolly as much as a drawing, and it reminds me in a way of like the horror films of the 1980s, where teenagers would be punished by some sort of faceless killer for having sex or doing drugs. Even though this is set in the 70s, this seems to be kind of tapping into that. That sort of loss of innocence thing again. As soon as the kids start experimenting with something that that's taboo, they get tainted.
Yeah. They deserve to die in the horror movie, and here they deserve to get mutated, it seems.
Well, I think you've got a title of the next book there, Tainted.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, I mean, it's quite a long comic, because I haven't had the privilege of reading it yet, but does it stay in the pace throughout the whole thing?
Yes, very much so. I couldn't put it down. I actually had to stop myself a few times to actually have a conversation with other people.
I'd say it actually slowed down towards the end. I'm not certain, but I think he might have wrote in a happy ending. Probably because his friend says, it's horrible. It's really horrible. But he's written it. I don't know if he intended to write in a happy ending. For two characters, there's a happy ending,
I was expecting everyone to die, actually.
But
actually,
I don't think anyone would survive.
At the end of the day, the happy ending for two characters gives it a sort of balance. Some people die, some people get. Lots of people screw up, lots of people die, lots of people screw up. Two people have a happy ending when they're starting anew, afresh. Mm. So that gives it a sort of balance. Not everyone gets fucked up.
Dickon, what you were saying though about whether it sustains the pace, it's interesting that it took him 9 years to do 12 installments, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it took him a long time. I didn't know it took him that long. I suppose because it's also, you know, this isn't going to.
He's whispering.
Because it took a while. Look how much intensive it is to draw this, that the star as well. I imagine he must have been doing lots of illustrations.
He's got a local ink supply.
Printing one panel at a time. I imagine he'd be doing loads of illustration work in between. Is he not? What else has he done apart from the Boros stuff?
He's done the cover for. Is it Rolling Stones? Yeah. He's done album covers. He's a pretty iconic graphic artist. Sort of 80s and 90s, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I got my copy from Peckham, and there's an arts college nearby, and it's been out so many times. I bet it's like the art students had it out.
Yeah, I can easily see that.
It's really well known amongst like anyone who wears black and sort of goes to art college.
Everyone looked at the semi-cop.
Shout out to you guys.
Emos as well. But loads of emos at the
same time. Something I did love is the introductory panel to each, you know, either the very phallic or the very vaginal imagery. And yet it having loads of other referencing, the half-eaten orange, the stick, the twisted barbed wire thorns, the little bush, and all of that, and yet at the same time had a strong reference throughout the whole story and these simple icon imagery.
Actually, that reminds me a bit of The Watchmen.
Yeah, okay.
But that's about the only thing it does.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be reading too much into it that quite a lot of the chapter headings are drawn in a font that you can almost, you can barely interpret? You have to look at it for quite a long time to realise actually what the words say. That he's trying to suggest that you should read more into some of the imagery than let it sort of wash over you.
Well, I don't know whether it says cut or clit. And I still don't.
Are you taking the mic?
No, I'm really not.
No, you're right. That could be clip.
The more it says window pane, that took me a good 30 seconds to read it.
Which one?
I have to find it now.
But it's no.
That one I found. The action.
It's pad.
Yeah,
as well. This one.
The action. Yeah.
That's
bag
different?
Action.
That's like that old. That's based on the old Given fonts. Is that the drug influence you were talking about earlier from the 70s?
I mean, the whole point of the book. It's about that. About going the surface. And what I was going to say is that, you know, Paul was saying that the book is just, you know, people having sex and becoming mutants. But that's the surface of the book, because for me the book is going to the essence. You know, going to the essence of everybody, and you know, really connecting with it no matter what. So In any case, this is my favourite page of the book.
It's the
last one. Mm. I think it's so beautiful the
what
way.
What do you think happens next?
I don't know. That's what I was going to ask you. But this whole idea of the hair floating and meshing with the waves, I think it's just so beautiful.
I still get the image.
The idea that it had finished. I'd expected, because I perhaps misheard last time, that someone was actually, there's like a sequel to this. Obviously not.
No,
because obviously
that
said
was Ghost World.
That, right.
Because Ghost World has this ambiguous ending, a lot of people want to know what happened next.
Yeah.
And the girls do turn up, like age 70, in another one of his books. So if you want it to have an ending, you can read that other book.
Okay.
But if you don't want it to, you can just, you know.
The whole book is the 70-year-old.
No, they're only like in three panels.
Oh, right.
Books, yeah. Like,
if you're small press comics, you must do this. If you want attention, that's it.
Yeah.
That's a bit cynical, but there's no incentive for a small press illustrator, comic creator, to explain the stirring truth behind everything in one issue. There's no incentive at all. Putting all your cards on the table in one comic book, in one comic collection.
I don't think this guy is
small
press, though, to be honest.
No, I don't. He's doing this to tell a story and to do his own thing. I don't think this guy would actually care that much if it sold or not. He would focus on the artwork.
But he started out as small press, I'm pretty certain.
Yeah.
And your style of your writing and your drawing in your first few years sort of tends to stick with you.
Well, how successful has it been received critically? Yeah, well, not critically, I imagine it's been quite popular because.
Right.
But I mean, commercially, has it been a big success?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, the movie is apparently in pre-production.
Oh, God, no.
A script by Neil Gaiman and Roger Avery, who wrote Beowulf. And allegedly, although I'll believe that when I see it, to be directed by the guy who did Zodiac and Seven, David Fincher.
It's going to be animated.
Seven?
I doubt if
he's doing it.
I don't think it'll work. I mean,
you'd
I
have
really
to cut a lot out.
How can you do this as a film?
How can you do Watchmen as a film? It comes out next summer.
Don't
even get me started.
No, I mean, to the point.
Sorry,
I mean,
Bush isn't out of office yet. You can't do this. You can't make this into a movie. This is crap. Anyway, sorry, it'll be rubbish.
You can say crap at 5 o'clock on the radio.
Can you say Vagina?
In context.
And clit. Can you say clit?
I'll ask the studio
because,
manager.
No, because that's part of it. That's in context.
I know. I can't
make a good film out of it. It'll be rubbish. Because Bush is out of office yet, and all the animals that put him in the power are still there. They're never going to let this go through.
Well, it doesn't help that one of the screenwriters is now doing 15 years for vehicular manslaughter, but, you know, we'll see.
Hey.
Is that killing cars?
Class action.
Sorry.
Really?
Oh dear.
Okay. Yeah,
oh,
a month
dear.
Ago.
No.
Neil Gaiman should stick to writing books.
I'd rather see Hellboy. I can't say F, can I? Yeah. No. I'm not that happy that this has been handed over to Hollywood. That's what I like about stuff like Love and Rockets. Hollywood never touch it. I mean, well, they will eventually.
When they run out of stories.
To non-white punk lesbians. It's going to take forever before they get there.
But I mean, if you know, I know we've done this discussion to death many times down the pub and in other places.
But for the sake of our radio listeners,
you know, comics that are good as films. You can argue about Tim Burton's Batman and argue about the recent Batman, ignoring the whole Robin stuff, but the most recent outcoming, which does actually stick to the books. You've got Hellboy, which, tongue-in-cheek, don't even get me started on Constantine or Elektra, but very rarely does... Yeah, but very rarely does a comic transfer over to a film because there... And I think Scott McCloud examines this. You haven't got the cross relationship with panels. You're looking at one screen and you're being told what to look at. Whereas when you're in a comic, you can look at one panel and another panel and see a relationship. You had commented about the suddenly coming out of the foot. Now, yes, you can do the repeated imagery in a film, but it's either over the top or very hidden. Whereas in a comic, you can flip back and forth, but you haven't got a video controller in cinema.
Yeah, I agree with you. But there's the whole thing, books and films, comics and films, and vice versa. And it works best, you take the original idea and just run with it.
Yeah.
Dark Horse did that with Predator and Aliens, and which was regurgitated on the movies, and they fucked up. They messed it up a couple of times, first time around, but they actually got the hang of a lot of stories. I'm blind all the time. They got a hang of a lot of stories Dark Horse was telling, yeah. So it can be done, but you've got to take the original idea and then run with it.
Yeah.
Just out of interest, by the way, are people tempted to go to see Persepolis?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
it's really good.
I am interested in it.
I've got to read the book
I'm
first.
I want to read the book first.
Which I've just got hold of.
Come on, boy.
Well, it's just,
no, because I'm ready.
Just because it's going to be one of those things that won't be in the cinema for that long because it won't be that popular. So I think if you guys are interested,
I'll
go see it. We should try
this unlock.
If people are interested,
well, we could
try
do, we could do an outing.
Hey, an outing.
But I think
you're
the
so
pacing
gay.
Is also different. I mean, because you can pace things so differently when you're doing a comic or when you're doing a film. I mean,
you
obviously...
No, you are.
I don't know. One of the reasons I enjoy manga and why I think it translates so well into anime is because they really take the pacing seriously. And they do try to emulate the pacing in the comic quite well. And I think that's why they do take time. That's why you have you don't pick up 12 volumes of an anime series and you just do, you know, a film 2 hours long. No, you do probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 episodes 25 minutes long, and it works. And obviously that's what Hollywood is not prepared to do.
Well, actually, that's why
so.
I'd be very surprised if David Fincher made this film, because he's gone on record saying that he felt frustrated making Zodiac because he wished it was three times as long. They're trying to squeeze that story into 2.5 hours.
Okay.
He felt frustrated doing that. Mm. So I'd be surprised if he wanted to do that again.
Was he needs to make a longer film than this time?
But I think if
anyone pay for a 6-hour version of Black Hole.
But I think you said last week that Preacher was going to be serialized,
a TV series.
Yeah.
Really?
So that would be interesting to see how it plays out.
This would work as a TV series because I think whenever you've got a comic which has been installed
it would
or.
It's very lost though, wouldn't it? This is a TV series, it'd bury it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's very lost at the moment.
Yeah, this would make a great series, but. It'd be really you'd have to add other bits to it. I think you'd have to have some humour to lighten it, otherwise it'd be really hard going.
Oh, I laughed at lots of bits.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny things in there.
Yeah,
there was really dark humour, but there was funny things.
There's like humour that does actually bring you away from the darkness a little bit.
I mean
is it again?
The funny things referencing the tale, you know, when he's with her. Okay, you've not read that bit yet, but...
but
you will.
No,
but you will.
A bit earlier on.
There is a lot of
humour. Actually, no, the very first thing. He's dissecting a frog and he passes out. It's funny. I mean, and
it looks like a vagina.
And the thing is, what he does is throughout, and it does lighten the darkness, which actually, this is a point we didn't come across earlier, but yeah, it does lighten the darkness all the way through. It's like,
and makes the darkness darker, because when you've got a light contrast, yeah.
And with his artwork, that's...
Even more.
Yeah, no, that effective is it goes he likes contrast.
Well, that's what I was going to say earlier when we were talking about a couple of characters surviving. In a way, that makes it worse because if everyone died at the end, you'd kind of accept, oh, it's got this bleak ending. But because there is like redemption, there's hope for a couple of characters. The fact that the others die makes it that much worse for them in
but
a way.
Not everyone does die. I mean, lots of people die. Lots of people get.
Yeah.
Who are close to the group get really screwed up, just hanging with the group, and two people have a probably really happy. It may be we don't know it's going to be a happy ending. They're in the middle of nowhere, but probably got a happy ending. So that's more balanced. It's a bit more like when bad things happen. Like it probably does happen a bit like that. Some people come through. I had a bad time, but now everything's great.
And I think you do get
it's
that
balanced.
Element of hope there for everyone. And then you have the... And don't say it now. But something occurs that... No, shush. Something occurs that suddenly throws a lot of characters into a negative situation. And only a few survive from that. And I think those who have read it understand. gestures dog face, and people move on from that. But there is a huge understanding there that without that element, you would also have a lot of characters getting in the way. I think it works as almost a plot device as well, so you can focus a lot more on the effect of some characters not being there anymore. You know, it highlights and contrasts more the actions of the others.
For more info about the Streatham Library Graphic Novels Readers Group, which meets every 2 to 3 weeks, please visit www.panelborders.com and click on the link marked blog. If you'd like to mix with comic book and underground zine creators, why not come along to Jimmy Gherkin's Comics and Zines event at The Plough in Museum Street on the 19th of July. There's more info about that as well on my blog. Thanks for listening.